Hello, boys and girls. This is Nick Bone from the Ready Working Show, where we speak with a variety of guests on their experiences entering the workforce, the tips and tricks they use to be successful, as well as perspectives from the other side of the table as recruiters and employment specialists. I'm excited to introduce today's guest, Lin Shen. She came to Canada to study East Asian Studies in a master's program at the University of Toronto. Lin has experience working for Western Ontario and her current employer, Ryerson University, as an international student advisor. In today's episode, we discuss why Lin chose to come to Canada for her education and provide some insight and experience for international student life in Canada, such as traveling, education, and work. Hello, Lin. Welcome to the show. It's great to have you here.
Thank you. Thank you, Nick, for having me here.
Absolutely. I'm really looking forward to discussing your experiences and your journey of where you are today. I know we were talking a little bit before the show started about your education and that you did a master's degree in East Asian Studies at the University of Toronto, but you didn't do your undergraduate in Canada, right?
Yeah, I did my undergrad in China, in the city of Tianjin.
How was that?
It was pretty good. I did my undergrad degree in history and also in business administration. So I kind of humanities, but also business degree for my undergrad. Because at that time, my mom was saying history may be a little bit hard to find a job. So why don't you explore something else? And I decided maybe I will try business administration because a lot of people were taking that. It's still very popular.
Definitely. So for maybe people who are not too familiar with China, Tianjin, that's near Beijing, right?
That's right.
Yeah. Is it south or north of Beijing?
I think it's east of Beijing.
East of Beijing, okay.
Actually, I don't know. My geography is terrible, so.
That's why you did history, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So what made you decide to go to Canada for your master's degree?
So, yes, yeah, so I was mentioning I did my undergrad in two degrees. Yeah. And I just realized I like history better. And I like, you know, East Asian studies, particularly like political history and social history. So I decided to, you know, do my master's abroad because my dad always, you know, kind of was talking, oh, you got to do a degree overseas. So I kind of had an idea when I was growing up. So yeah, master was my chance to go abroad. And I contacted several universities and luckily my master supervisor at U of T, he agreed to take me on. So that's why I'm here.
That's awesome. So what was it like packing up and moving over here? Did you have a suitcase, two suitcases? Did you plan it all out or did you just go with it?
Yeah, I had two very big suitcases. Maybe other people would pack more, but I think at that moment, I feel like I'm kind of tiny person. I couldn't carry more. And there's also like a limit of how heavy your suitcase can be when you board plane. So basically I packed for about maybe 2-3 days, not too long. And I use those kind of like bags. You can just suck the air. And so I put a lot of, I packed my blankets, like sheets, bed sheets and pillows, everything. But I realized when I came here, I realized a lot of things I packed, I could just buy here. But at that moment, I didn't know. I just packed everything.
And then when you got here, what did you have a place to stay already? And you had someone organize that for you or did you do it yourself? What was the process like for that?
So, yeah. So I applied for the dorm. So the grad house for grad students at U of T. But I came to Canada a bit earlier, so I couldn't move into the dorm when I came because they have a like move-in date.
Right.
So I knew the date beforehand, so I kind of was searching like on a map for the Airbnb, like the breakfast and bed. I think at that time it's not called like Airbnb, it's just B&B.
Right.
So I contacted one. And I called them and sent them a lot of emails and kind of figure out how it works. So I paid deposit. So yeah, after right. I landed, I went to that place for several nights. And when the move-in date was, you know, arrived, I moved into my dorm.
Awesome. So then you started your program. And how did you find the program in Canada? Was it a lot different than university in China? Or would you say the experience is pretty similar?
It is. By that time, I think I was the only student from mainland China.
Okay.
So other people in my program, their English are perfect. I think my English was not that great. Like sometimes I just kind of missed what was going on in the class for, you know, for the beginning of the 2-3 classes. I had to really catch up. And then reading, there were a lot of readings.
Oh, yeah.
And then a lot of writing, which I was not used to. And all of them are in English. So, yeah, right. it was quite an adjustment. So I studied a lot. I basically went to, like, a library, like, from 7 or 8 a.m. and stayed there until, like, 11.
Wow.
I think that's the time robots kind of closed. So, right. Yeah. So that was how I started. But I think after one semester, I got a hand of how that worked and then, you know, expectations and what I should do. So I think second semester was much more smoother.
Right. It was a lot easier for you now that you kind of had a good idea of what's going on. And
yeah. Yeah. It was less intimidating. At the beginning, it was kind of intimidating to me.
Right. And did you find that there were a lot of supports for you from the university for the language part? Were the teachers or professors pretty helpful, and, you know, other students, how did you find them?
In my program, there are some PhD students that are also from China. So whenever I have any questions, I always went to them asking for advice and suggestions. And also my department, they always held like social gatherings, parties, and when they're kind of, you know, to meet with people and talk about what I was working on, what other people were working on, just kind of make friends. I also made a lot of friends who were also studying at U of T at that time, but they were not in my program. So okay. Basically they would like, you know, host house parties, they would, you know, right. go out for delicious food, and then maybe like go sightseeing. So we would do that on the weekends when we don't have a lot of classes or assignments. That was quite nice. And I think I went to the writing center a lot at U of right. T for my, you know, for my writing. And they also had courses. So I signed up for that one just to okay. polish my writing.
Oh, awesome. So now that you're in university and you're doing the East Asian studies, did you consider, or were you thinking about what you wanted to do after you graduated?
Yeah, by that time, I thought I was gonna continue my academic journey, maybe to do a PhD, and also after that, researching and teaching in a university or college. That was how I planned when I came here. But I think I just changed my mind. I think a lot of students, international students, may think about like how to get PR, you know, because right. that's a goal for many people. So yeah, when I thought about that,
do you mind explaining just for people who may not know what PR is or what it stands for?
Yeah, so it's permanent residence. It's also called like maybe maple leaf card, if I translate from Chinese people how they call it, or something similar to the green card in US. So it right. kind of give you rights to live here permanently and work here. Yeah.
Awesome.
So yeah, so when it was near the graduation point, a lot of people were, you know, a lot of my friends, they're in the process of applying for PR. There are many streams I can talk about, you know, that separately. But, you know, at that moment, I realized, you know, I kind of want that too, because I kind of like Canada. People here are cool. And the society is very friendly and multicultural. I really like it. I want to stay here. And I think about, you know, my career path. What is the best route for me to get my PR here and, you know, can continue to stay in Canada? And also I realized at that point, I don't really like research that much. I don't really want to be an academic. So yeah,
it's not as fun as you thought.
Yeah. It can be like, it may not be a good fit to me at that moment. So right. Because I worry a lot about, you know, how I can stay here, what would be after I, you know, finish a PhD, what's the career prospects? Is that hard right. to find a, you know, teaching position? So at that time, I decided maybe I'll just, you know, find a job here. So I started working, looking for a job.
Do you think that finding a job is really important for PR? Is that something that the government looks for?
So basically for master students, you can apply through the provincial nominee program. At that point, that was a possibility for all of us who were finishing our master's degree here. Yeah, but at the same time, kind of want to know how it feels to be working, because right. you know, I was a little bit tired of, you know, continuing to be a student. So at that moment, I kind of really want to find a job and work.
Right, and you could get the work permit right through your master's. Is it a 1 to 3 year work permit, right?
So basically, that's the post-graduation work permit. So and the length of the work permit will depend on how long your academic program is in Canada. So right. for me, because I studied here for 2 years, so I can get a 3 year work permit.
Okay, interesting. So you decided to work after graduation, or was this during your program?
After graduation.
After graduation. Okay.
Yep.
So what was the first job that you applied for that you were interested in?
It was kind of really hard to find a job because I had zero Canadian working experience. Actually, I had one, but it's for like RA, research assistant for my professor. But it's basically more related to what I was studying at that time. So it's not really a normal workplace experience.
I'm wondering if you would have any suggestions or advice to other international students who are, let's say, they're in their programs, they're about to graduate, maybe they're in third or fourth year, and they're starting to think, well, I really want to get a job after I graduate in Canada, and I want to stay in Canada, I want to get my permanent residence. Mm. How can they get that first work experience? Because it's probably not going to be, like you said, the dream job that you want, right? It's going
to
be...
It's going to take some time to get what you want.
So would you have any advice for them for looking for a job, or where did you find the UPS job?
Oh, it's a referral of a friend.
Okay.
So, but my case is a bit unique because what I learned is humanities. So there are not a lot of jobs in the market that are for grads from humanities, especially East Asian studies.
Right.
And at that time, it was not clear what I really wanted. So I was just like, get a job and to see how it worked. For international students who are here and thinking about getting a job, maybe think about your academic program. Is this something you want to do for your career, or it's totally different? And I know that a lot of academic programs nowadays have internship co-op components. Right. So to see if you can participate will be a great start. And there are a lot of resources on campus, such as, you know, like Career Center, program advisors. Those are all people, all international student advisors. Those are all people you can go to for advice. I think another good opportunity for a student is there are a lot of, you know, volunteer and part-time jobs on right. campus. I think that's a really good, you know, start point, because if you have, you know, on your resume, your work experience as a student staff in your university, I think that will catch a lot of eyes, especially if you are international students and you just came here to study, not having a lot of chances to work a lot of side jobs. That will be really good.
Oh yeah, and definitely, especially since you also mentioned that the reason that you got the job was from a referral. And volunteer opportunities can be really great for referrals for other jobs as well as the experience itself.
Yeah, exactly. I think volunteering is a good start because basically, you can start to kind of understand or learn more about how the workplace operates and then, right. you know, the dynamic and also etiquettes and then, you know, all sort of kind of stuff. And but I would advise, you know, if you want to get a job, if you want to volunteer, your motivation should not be like, oh, I want to volunteer so I can get a referral, because right. in that way people would feel like maybe it's too aggressive from you. So the vibe may be a little bit different. I would suggest just enjoy the volunteering.
You want to do.
And yeah. something might happen, but don't kind expect of it. Just exactly less expectation.
Oh, wow. Yeah, absolutely. So definitely volunteer work. Try to build those connections by doing something you love and you enjoy. And if you get that referral, then it's a bonus.
Exactly. It's not something that will come, but it's actually a bonus and adds on.
Right.
Sometimes it didn't happen, but that's okay. If that didn't happen. Exactly. And you can make many friends and just be yourself and let other people get to know more about you. Maybe some opportunities will happen in the future, right? Who knows?
And I know, like you said earlier as well, you're spending so much time at the library. Was that throughout your whole program, or did you find later in the program you had a bit more time to look for these volunteer? Because I'm sure a lot of international students and students at university, maybe they're thinking, I don't have enough time to volunteer. What kind of suggestions would you give to them for time management or trying to figure out a way to volunteer?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Like the first year, I spent a lot of hours in the library. I think it's a learning curve as well, because the first year I didn't really know what to expect. So just study hard.
Right.
Second year, kind of know how it is. And then maybe I learned to study smarter and then spend more time with like friends and social circles just to be immersed in the society. Yeah. So it's definitely like a drop in terms of library hours in my second year. And also in my second year, I started to think more about, okay, is there any conference I can go to?
Right.
Can I send my paper or my projects to somebody who might be interested for me to kind of participate in a, you know, presentation or, you know, like conference? Yeah. So yeah, so I start to have more ideas about what I can do.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's great, because again, it goes back to networking and building your network so that you can hopefully get those referral suggestions and advice and experience and friends, like you said.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, making friends is extremely important, because we are here by ourselves. You know, when we came here, we just came by ourselves. So having a circle of supportive friends it's going to change your life.
And like you said, joining clubs, conferences, dinners. How did you connect with these people? Was it through WeChat? I know that's primarily what they use in mainland. Are there any other apps or clubs, programs that you use to stay in contact with?
So yeah, for a lot of like Chinese friends I made, we basically just use WeChat or text, right. just text people through cell phone. I think for a lot of like academic related activities, just like really monitor what is coming in my school emails.
Right.
If there's a chance, if there's a talk I'm interested in, I would just go. And if there's a conference chance, I would, you know, also sign up, something like that. And then that's kind of also still related to school, but for right. outside of school, I think I started to take like dance classes and those kind of club activities and, you know, kind of expand my social circle. At that time, I went to church very frequently. So I made a lot of friends there. And then, you know, people there are, you know, they do a lot of different occupations. So I got to learn more about the real world.
Right.
Yeah.
Did you ever use any professional networking sites such as LinkedIn?
Yes, I had my LinkedIn when I was graduating. Okay. I didn't have a lot to put on at that right. time. So gradually building it. Yeah, so a lot of people would choose to kind of, you know, like invite people for a coffee chat. Right. I tried that too. But at the beginning, it might be hard because you had nothing on your, you know, profile.
Right.
So maybe other people are. Profile. Exactly. And then people may be less interested in getting to know you. But don't be discouraged. It's just the way it is. And if you could not connect with some people, just move on and find other people.
Oh, yeah. I have one friend, and the suggestion that she gave to me when I first started on LinkedIn was to find either a position or an industry that you're really interested in and connect with every single person that you can.
Wow.
Right? And she said, just send it to everyone and don't feel discouraged if you don't connect with all of them, because odds are a few of them will connect with you, and that's where you can start.
Exactly. Yeah. Don't feel discouraged or don't take it personally, because it's not because of you. It's just the way it is.
Right. And then once you start building a few more connections, you get that credibility, and then you can build more and more and more.
Yeah, yeah. Once you have a clearer idea about what you want to do, you can talk more about yourself and like how you like to learn about the position or that person's experience or that company. The other person would be more interested talking to you too.
And I'm sure you have lots of skills as well, even though you haven't always put them into work practice. University provides you with so many skills that you can use within a job or the real world as well. So make sure you highlight those.
Yeah, those are transferable skills. Yeah. Doesn't necessarily need to be from a direct working experience. If you don't have any, it can be critical thinking, communication,
research,
writing skills, research. Exactly. That's what most of us grad students put on research analysis.
Absolutely. So your first job was the UPS. And then what about your second job? How did you go into that
one? Oh, yeah, my second job, as I mentioned, I was at one point I was having two part-time jobs. One is UPS, one is teaching Chinese. And my second job is like my first like full-time job. That's at education company in Toronto.
Okay. What did you do there?
So my first role was marketing coordinators, because I speak Mandarin. Oh, highlight, if you can speak Mandarin or other language, is a really good bonus. Exactly. And then my role was marketing coordinator to help promote the school programs.
Okay.
Through like social media or events, and also other promotional, you know, like activities.
Okay. And you enjoyed that job as well then? Or you wanted to move on to something else?
Yes, I like it. I think through that experience, because, you know, marketing, you got to talk to a lot of people. So I think that gave me a great opportunity to know how things work and then how to propose ideas, how to partner with external companies.
Right.
So it really, it's really good intro role for me, who had no like, you know, formal full-time experience, working experience in Canada.
Right.
And I made a lot of friends through that role too.
Which is good.
Yeah.
So then after that role, what did you decide to do? How long were you in that role for?
It was about a year. And then I think there was also an internal role opened up, and then people were encouraging me to apply for that. So I got it. The second role, and it was managing academic program. I stayed in that role, in the second role, for about almost 2 years before I moved to Western for the role of international student advisor.
So what is the international student advisor? What do they do?
So basically, 70% of my job is to advise students on immigration matters, such as study permit, visa, co-op work permit, working authorization, post-grad work permit, and potential pathways to permanent residence. And also other advising that contains like personal matters, financial concerns, cultural adaptation, and also academic adjustment.
Right. Which you're an expert in. Definitely.
I could speak more from my experience. I don't know how much help I was to students, but I think they like talking to somebody who can also speak Mandarin and right. share the same experience as them too.
Absolutely. I think that's really important as well. Being able to share those experiences. It's a different kind of understanding for sure.
I feel like in my role, the most important job is to listen. Because maybe they feel like, oh, a lot of employees at university, they don't have international student background and they're not from China. So
right.
Sometimes they want to express something, express their feelings and thoughts and, you know, like their plans. So maybe, and sometimes they really want somebody to be there to listen to them.
Right.
And I think, you know, like giving them a chance to be heard by somebody who can understand them can really help.
Yeah, it can definitely give them the confidence to speak with you as well, right? So after this position, what did you do next?
So that's my current role. I feel like you did a job interview. Like, yeah. What is your first role? How did you find a job? Why did you move on to next?
Well, it's really interesting because everyone has a different journey. And a lot of the times, what you want to do when you go to university is not what you end up doing by the time you graduate, right?
Yeah, I guess that's the case for me at least.
Right. And it's the same with a lot of other people that I speak to. You know, they start out thinking this is what they want to do, or this is what my parents want me to do. And then as they're going through the program, and then maybe they take that first job in that specific field, they realize it's not for them. It's not what they're interested in.
It is a painful realization because you got to make some life changes at that point, but just be brave. It will all work out.
Definitely.
So speaking of my current role, I currently work at Ryerson. So I moved back to Toronto. So I realized, you know, I miss the Toronto life and I miss my friends here, and also my boyfriend is here too, so I moved back.
So what have you traveled anywhere in Canada?
Yes.
Ontario even?
Yes, Ontario and Canada, I traveled throughout my time in Canada and also traveled to US quite often because it's very close.
Right.
Been to Montreal, Vancouver, and also other parts of Ontario, like Waterloo or London. I think I went to like other places like Niagara Falls.
Right.
Like that's what everyone will go.
Everyone goes.
Yeah, everyone goes as, you know, a visitor. What else? Maybe some other smaller places I can't think of now. I plan to visit Ottawa, maybe after the COVID situation ends.
Oh yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. Ottawa's beautiful, especially the older part, yeah.
I know, I love the, you know, like the pictures of Ottawa. I really wanna go. I want to visit museums and also other, like, you know, architectural buildings. Yes, exactly. Yeah.
So what is your favorite place, or what was your favorite place to visit in Canada if you had to choose one location?
I really like Montreal. I think I visited Montreal 2-3 times and in different seasons. I really like it. I hope I could speak French.
Yeah.
But I love it. It's very artsy city.
Right.
And it's so beautiful, and a lot of museums, art galleries, and food is amazing.
Yeah.
And it's just really nice.
So is the food as good as the Chinese food though?
They have a Chinatown in
do they?
Montreal. I think so. I think the Chinatown is actually really good. I like their food.
So what kind of food do you like if you were to choose? Would you have Canadian food or Chinese food if you had the choice?
Where, in Toronto or in Montreal?
In Toronto or Montreal.
I like to explore more.
Yeah.
But if I don't have Chinese food for like in about 2 weeks, I would be really not myself.
Yeah.
I need to have some Chinese.
So what kind of Chinese food do you usually eat?
I like, there also so many options in Toronto.
Yeah, that's true.
I like spicy food, like Sichuan food.
Yeah.
And you know, Mapo tofu.
Yeah.
And also other dishes I don't know how to speak in English. And I also like the rice noodles.
Okay.
Yeah. And I like, sometimes I like Cantonese food, but I can't have it often.
No?
Because I, no. Because my hometown cuisine, the style is kind of different. And okay. I like noodles. I like dumplings.
Dim sum?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dim sum is also part of the Cantonese cuisine. So I can have it maybe like
sometimes
once in several months, but not too often. But I know a lot of people here love dim sum. Do you like it?
Yeah, it's pretty good. So where is your hometown?
My hometown is Zhejiang Province.
Oh, okay.
Zhejiang.
Where is that near?
That is...
Like out of major cities.
Hangzhou is the capital city.
Okay.
My hometown is about 2 hours driving distance from Hangzhou. Yeah, it's kind of near Nanjing, Shanghai, so that area.
Oh, okay, right. Okay. Awesome. Yeah, I've been there, so I know Shanghai.
Oh, do you like it?
Yeah, it's a big city though.
I know a lot of like foreigners live there too.
Yeah, I went to Shanghai and Suzhou.
Oh, Suzhou is beautiful.
Yeah, we went through the water canals.
Oh
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
We travel like the Chinese in
exactly. Yeah, that's why I know where I've been to Tianjin once. Yeah, just it was for the there was a carnival or like a festival.
Oh really?
There. Yeah, it was some kind of like an amusement park. I can't remember the name of it, but
yeah, like Tianjin is lovely.
It is. Huge buildings.
Huge buildings, yeah. And the food here, people here are also very friendly and welcoming.
Definitely.
And they're very proud of, you know, their hometown. They're very proud of, you know, the city and Tianjin, the cultural.
Yeah, definitely. And I'm sure everyone heard of Wuhan now as well. Have you ever been there?
Yeah, I've been in Wuhan. Yeah. I went there in my first year when I was doing my undergrad. I love it, Wuhan is.
Yeah.
Wuhan University is such a beautiful university.
It is, right on East Lake.
Yeah, and I was there, and then there was, at that time, there was still some like cherry, you know,
cherry blossom. Yeah.
Yeah, I love it. And the university itself is just, it's a traveling site.
Oh yeah. And you went biking, like a bicycle around the East Lake then?
No, it sounds like you did that.
Yeah, I did.
Did you like it?
Oh, yeah. It was beautiful. Yeah. I lived in Wuhan for 2 years.
You lived there for 2 years?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, you must love the food there.
Yeah. Like when you said the noodles, it reminded me of the spicy beef noodle for breakfast.
Oh, I love it. It's called ruganmian, right?
Yeah. Oh, that's hot dry noodle.
Oh, it's a different kind. Sorry.
Yeah, different kind.
Yeah. Oh,
they're good though. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I love their food and this, you know, street food snacks.
Oh yeah. Yeah. They have the Happy Valley, I think it's called, or a lot
Happy
of this.
Valley.
Yeah. I don't know the Chinese name, but.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think it may be called Hubuxiang. I don't know.
Probably. Yeah. It was a very interesting experience. It was a lot of fun. Like you said, the people there are very friendly as well. Very proud to be Wuhanese.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because they had the Yangtze River, right? That flowed through there. So it used to be the story of all the shipping routes. And all mm-hmm. the sailors would stop there to eat their ruge mian for breakfast. And
wow, you really know a lot.
A little bit, not too much.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. So I'm curious about if you have any unusual habits or strange things that you love or that you love to do.
Strange things.
Yeah, something unusual.
Weird habits.
Yeah.
I like collecting fortune cookie fortunes.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. I like, you know, positive messages. And, you know, like if you go to like a Chinese restaurant, usually after you pay for the meal, they give you fortune cookies and notes will be inside a cookie.
Right.
And I really like it because, you know, it gives me new perspectives of life, and I usually collect them in my purse. Okay. So I've been collecting every single of them since I've been to Canada. So
how many do you think you have?
I don't know, like maybe like 100 or more.
What, and you just keep them in your purse, or do you hang them up after, or
just keep them in my purse?
So your purse is just filled with all the
fortunes. Yes.
Oh wow. Yeah, that's definitely an interesting habit.
I like it so much. Yeah. Usually if they don't give me fortune cookies, we'll be disappointed.
Yeah.
I feel like I should have given, should have been given like those kind of things.
A good fortune.
Yeah, good fortunes.
Do you have a favorite fortune that you've had? Like a quote or a message that you received on a fortune cookie that you always remember?
Yeah, so like there's one I actually post on my WeChat, Poyo Chen. So I think that's like earlier this year, last year, 2020. I think there's one fortune that says you don't ever need to worry about money. And another one, because it's a big meal, give me two. Another one is that you will always have good health.
Oh, wow.
And it's really good one because, you know, COVID, everyone is worried about losing their jobs and money, finances, and also health issues. So I was really happy that I received this too.
Yeah, those are perfect.
I really need it. I know. I know. This,
definitely. It'll be interesting which ones you get next year as well now, or this year, I should say.
Yeah, haven't got one yet. Yeah. I'll let you know.
Perfect. Sounds good. So how has a failure or an apparent failure later set you up for success?
Failure.
Yeah, so something that was a failure, but then later it turned out to be success, or it led you to be successful in a different area.
I could speak of some mini failures. Like for example, you want that job so much, but you didn't get it, or you were just not selected after three rounds of interview. Sometimes you can feel a sting. But I would want to mention like a major failure. That is, you know, after when I was finishing my master's program, I also applied for PhD because that was the original plan. Right. I didn't get into my dream school. So I think at that time I was kind of not feeling great about myself.
Right.
But also it is from that whole process of applying and waiting and everything that I realized maybe I don't like researching. I don't like academics life that much. So that pushed me to you know, look for a job.
Right, which ended up working out well for you then.
Thank you. I think so. I think I really like my job. I like helping international students.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for sharing.
Oh, no problem. So, I can talk about that. I think maybe for like 4 or 5 years ago, it's still a little bit painful to me, but now I feel like I can talk about that freely.
Yeah, definitely. And it sounds like you learned a lot from it as well, from the experience.
Learned a lot about everything about myself,
right?
Mainly about myself.
And they say that's why failures are so important as well, and that we shouldn't look at them so much as failures, but learning experience, because like you said, you get to learn so much about yourself, and depending on how you react to the failure or learning experience, it can change your future.
Yeah, because you know, for somebody like me, you know, everything before I came to Canada was kind of smooth. Like I didn't have a lot of major challenges or difficulties in my life. So responding to failures, it could be kind of a challenge to me at the beginning, but it also reminded me of a book I was recommended by another professor I encountered at U of T. So that book is basically talking about for young people, fail early and fail quick. So you get used to that. And also at the same time, you know what you really want to do.
Which book was that?
It's called Design Life, something like that. I kind of forgot my title. Design My Life or Design Life Design, something like that.
Do you remember the author by chance?
It is a social work worker or professor in that field. I can look it up and give you the accurate title.
Awesome. I'll add it in the description after.
Sure.
Awesome. So what is the best or most worthwhile investment that you have ever made, either in time, in money, anything like that, or energy even? An investment that you've made that has been worthwhile.
I want to give two examples. Yeah. One is more practical, one is more like self-realization, self, you know, improvement. The first thing I want to say is when I was working for the education company, I invest my time and money into kind of completing the immigration license. I think that really gave me, opened my door for a lot of opportunities in university and colleges to be immigration advisor.
Right.
And I really like it, turned out to be. The second example I want to give is I invest a lot of my time in reading.
Okay.
Reading novels and nonfictions, biographies. So I really like it. I think it's a good way to continue like building your reading habits, because sometimes after start working, people just read less and less. I think that's a great way to keep your mind sharp and then also curious about stuff.
Do you typically read in Chinese or in English?
In English, I usually go to like Indigo, like they have Heather's Picks. I would go through the list and then to see what I like. But I think most of the books I'm interested in, they have one commonality, that is to tell stories of females.
Okay.
We have strong female characters and I really like it.
Absolutely, yeah, that's really important as well. Because like, again, it said when you were doing the international advising, right? It's that connection and that shared experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Absolutely. So after you've done, what other types of things do you do other than reading? To keep sharp or to keep your continuous learning or engagement or?
Continuous learning and engagement. You mean like a professional wise or?
Or even personal. For example, it could be something you do when you're feeling overwhelmed or anxious. It could be something to better yourself, for example, like meditation or running. Anything?
Yeah, I like doing yoga. So stretching and, you know, to do the postures. I like it. I like reading.
Yeah.
I also like Netflix.
Yeah, that's a popular one.
It's very popular one, yes. There are a lot of shows I like on Netflix. I like movies and I like talking to my friends and families. If I feel down, I think the first thing I'll do is to talk to a friend or my family.
And it's 24, is it 13 hours difference between here and China?
It is now, but I think in the summertime it's 12 hours different.
So how do you usually communicate with them? Is it still through WeChat and you just try to get them in the morning or the night or?
Yeah, usually I talk with my family in the nighttime because that's their early morning or late morning.
Right.
And WeChat has the function of video chat. So that's how we
you can kind of FaceTime.
Yes.
Awesome. So I have a question for you, and it's from another podcaster who created this question. So I'm going to give him all the credit. Essentially, it's from Tim Ferriss, and he asks, if you had a metaphorical billboard that you could put a message on and everyone could see it, what would you want that billboard to say? It could be a quote, a motivation, something that you want everyone out there to know and to think about as we go into or continue with 2021 now.
Life is too short for bad sushi.
Nice.
I'm joking.
That's a good one.
no, then I'll be the one from me. I think now to say like, stay home, please.
Yes.
Keep social distancing.
Yes.
Because everyone is worried about the spread of COVID, and just please stay in and protect everyone, including yourself. That would be something from me.
Right. Perfect. That's awesome. Is there anything else you'd like to share with all of our listeners today?
It's you know, I hope you are enjoying this episode, and if you have more questions about you know, like how international student life is in Canada, you know, this is a great place to follow. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for coming on the show today. It was a pleasure to speak with you.
Thank you for having me. Thank you so much.
We'll talk again soon. Bye.
Bye.
If you are interested in finding work in the public or education sector, or if you would just like to reach out to Lynn for general questions, you can reach out to her on Instagram, Facebook, or LinkedIn by using her name, Lynn Chen. Thank you all for tuning into our show. We hope you enjoyed today's episode, and as always, learned something you didn't know before, or found something interesting you can talk about at the next family dinner, whenever that is. If there is a topic you would be interested in hearing us talk about or discuss, you can reach out to us at readyworking.com or email contact@readyworking.com.